Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for March the 26th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. How are you tonight? And good evening, everyone. We have six special segments tonight. As you know, last week we had five. It's a new format that David has kind of tapped into, which I really appreciate. And thank him for taking the time to do all that. And the first of these special segments, we have news about veterans treatment courts, which are now popular in many states. I've been involved with it in some of the courts here in Florida. We'll hear the experience of a Texas veteran who served in Iraq, has post-traumatic stress, got into trouble with the law, and then went through a veterans treatment court in Texas. That should be very interesting. After that, we'll hear about the services offered by the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs. Florida is a very proactive veteran state, and it's probably one of the reasons we have so many veterans in Florida. I'm sure our climate has a lot to do with it as well. In the third segment, we'll learn about a VA program involving the use of brain scans to help diagnose post-traumatic stress disorder through the changes caused to a person's brain. That sounds very interesting. In the fourth part of the show tonight, we will revisit an issue we've discussed in some previous shows, which is VA benefits for veterans and their families who suffered illness from contaminated water at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, between 1953 and 1987. In the fifth segment, we'll hear about the Gold Star, Silver Star, and Blue Star recognition programs and various organizations which help families who have lost a relative in military service. In the final segment, we'll have some news from Washington about the VA. I know one of the popping news stories right now is whether or not Secretary Shulkin will continue to direct the Department of Veteran Affairs. I'm sure everyone's seeing that over the news channels these days. But first, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Remember, veterans, this is your show. David and I are just the conduits, the messengers. And if you have anything that you want to talk about regarding your own experiences, either in service or with the VA, please give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. But back over to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. In our first segment of the show this evening, we have a story from the state of Texas about veterans courts, or as they are sometimes called in some states, veterans treatment courts. For those not familiar, veterans treatment court programs are part of the civilian state court system in many states. They provide military veterans who enter the civil or criminal justice system, most often as the result of substance or drug abuse or mental health issues, caused or linked to injuries connected to the military service, such as post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, etc., an alternative to jail or prison time in certain cases. The courts were modeled after the drug treatment or mental health treatment courts first established in some states about two decades ago. Now, we have a story tonight, courtesy of the Texas Veterans Commission, for whom we give credit, sharing the experience of veteran Giovanni Pinto, an Iraq War veteran who dealt with a veterans treatment court after some legal problems he experienced upon returning home from his military service. Hope you'll enjoy it. So let's listen. Doug, if you'll please roll tape one.
So I was a 19-kilo heavy armor crewman. What that means in civilian terms is it's a tanker. I was on tanks. So I spent 5 years in the Army, and I was stationed at Fort Hood during that entire time. So my contract was for 4 years in the military. It was supposed to expire in 2003 in May. As we all know, that was the time that the Iraq War started. and there was an involuntary stop loss for all military personnel. I had to serve an extra year, and during that year, most of the time was in Iraq. We were shot at, IEDs, mortars. Every day was either someone got shot at, someone got injured, or something happened. Yeah, every day in Iraq was kind of interesting. So after I got out of the Army, I went to college and tried to just become a college student and blend in, and I really couldn't figure myself out in the college crowd. I dropped out like after my first semester of college, and I became a Target stock boy. I kept jumping from one job to another. I did construction work, truck driving, medical billing. I did painting, just trying to figure out what I was meant to do after the military. Since I had joined so early at 18, and by 22, I'd been trained by the military for 5 years. I'd advanced in rank. I was a sergeant. I had a position in the military. When I got out, I didn't kind of know who I was, where I fit in with the crowd. I did not share that I was a veteran even with most of my friends, most of the people I was encountering, and none of them knew that I had served. None of them knew that I just came back from Iraq. I was trying to separate or find myself, so I was kind of just put that behind me because I felt that when people heard you were a veteran, they automatically put a stigma on you that you are sick or that you are crazy, aggressive. And I was like, I don't want people to think that of me. I want them to really like me and understand me for who I am. So I just would leave that part of my life behind. So I got out in 2003, and 2013 is when I landed in the Veterans Court. I was out having drinks with a friend, and I was just kind of feeling happy and excited because it was my birthday, but inside I was sad and there was something wrong with me. I didn't realize what it was. I just kept a normal birthday for me, which was just going out and drinking. Until I got pulled over by the police. I got sent to the booking station here in the downtown Austin. They asked me for someone's phone number to bail me out, and I didn't know anyone. So I just had to stay there until the judge saw me, which is 5 days later, and I ended up spending that time locked up, yeah. So during the end processing of the booking, there's a question that asks you, are you a veteran? Have you ever been deployed? And I answered yes without knowing anything of it. They took that information and my phone number, and they passed it along to the Veterans Court, which I was unaware of and I had no idea existed. About 4 days after I got out of Travis County Jail, I received a phone call from the Veterans Court to see if I was interested in participating in a program. And I said, yes, of course, I'd be anything to keep my record clean. This was my first time getting in any kind of serious trouble. And I was actually really anxious and nervous about what the consequences were gonna be. I could have lost my driver's license and I wasn't gonna be able to drive. And so when someone called me with the opportunity to go into a program and get all of that stuff expunged, I jumped at the opportunity. Okay. So the Veterans Treatment Court gave me a treatment plan, and the treatment plan included going to see counseling at the vet center or the VA, going through AA classes, having to meet in regular meetings at the court every week and every 2 weeks. And the process lasted 1 year for me. And I also had to wear a bracelet which monitored my drinking because I had been in trouble for drinking. So they were trying to monitor and making sure that I didn't drink at all during the time that I was in this treatment process. I started to see a counselor, and we started to talk about things that I had never talked to anybody about for 10 years that I had gone out and just kept to myself. And after she heard my story and heard the reasons of my drinking, and they diagnosed me with PTSD because of some things that happened in Iraq that I just kept carrying with me. And the night of my birthday in 2003, while I was in Iraq, we received the mortar attack in our base, and a good friend of mine, a couple of friends of mine, one died, another was injured. And I had never really talked about that with anybody. And I guess subconsciously or something, as a defense mechanism, I was drinking heavily during that time because I would really get down on myself and I didn't know why. And the counselor helped me at the VA understand why it was that I was feeling that bad during that, sometimes the entire month of October. And we started work through the process, and slowly we started to see, improvement or understanding better of my situation. The Veterans Court program was not easy. It was a year long. It was time consuming. But from the very beginning, I was figuring out and finding out more about myself, of my situation. Not an easy process, but a process that if you focus on it and you put your time and effort into it, it can change your life. They call what they call blanket service. They wrap you around with service, a wraparound service, right? So they give you the counseling that you need for the drinking problem, if you have a drinking problem. They'll give you all the treatment that you need. They wrap you around with all of the services, and that is an effective way, I feel, of treating any mental health. I think that the Veterans Court, and I said this before, I think the Veterans Court was the best, worst thing that ever happened to me. I needed, at that point, I needed some focus. I needed some direction. And when I found out that other veterans were out there helping veterans retransition, I felt like this is where I need to do. This is my place, and this is what I'm going to work hard towards. So since the Veterans Court, I had a lot of time to think about what it is that I wanted to do. I had been going to college on and off for like 8 years at that point. And I said, you know, I'm gonna go back to school. I'm going to finish my degree. And I'm going to do something to help veterans. And I decided to pursue social work and went to Texas State University and got a master's in social work. So since then, my whole focus has been veterans and post-traumatic stress and helping them retransition in the civilian world. I am LMSW now, which stands for Licensed Medical Social Worker. Now I have the qualifications to go out there and help other veterans the way I was helped when I was in a bad situation.
Well, thanks to the Texas Veterans Commission for that interview. Richard, what are your thoughts? I know you have some experience with Veterans Treatment Course here in Florida.
Well, that was a great segment, David, and thanks for pulling that out. A couple things I just want to let our viewers know. The Veterans Court program is identical to what some people might recognize as the PTI program, the pretrial intervention program, which is a divergent program for people who have criminal charges. And because of a lot of mitigating factors in their background, they're able to enter into this program and help them get successfully through, as this young man talked about in his own situation, so that that criminal charge doesn't become an albatross around his or her neck. And as we saw on that last segment, by this young man getting through the program, he was able to then go on to college and get a master's and everything else. And I can tell you that if he hadn't had the opportunity of that divergent program through the Veterans Court, he probably wouldn't have that master's today. So kudos to, you know, the Veterans program. And the only difference between the PTI program or other divergent programs that they have out there in the criminal courts is that the veterans program is specifically geared toward veterans, which, again, kudos to the people who organize those in their particular states, because it's recognizing that veterans have unique situations that have put them into some criminal areas that probably, you know, they have mitigating factors, but the aggravating factors are what they incurred in the military. I know here in Florida we have probably a dozen or more of those divergent programs, veterans programs, and I know in more rural counties they're trying to get more of them, because I don't think anybody that I've run into, any judge that I've talked to, has ever said anything negative about the program. So, you know, it's just a great, it's just another way of helping our veterans. You know, and David, when you talk about the PTSD issues, and we're going to have a segment soon about that, you know, so many veterans take to alcohol or drugs to help them medicate themselves through the PTSD. Because as we've had on this show, you know, the VA is just so quick to throw drugs at these guys and gals, and they don't want to take the drugs. You know, the drugs become more of a problem than the actual condition. So they revert to some alcohol and drugs, and excessive alcohol can get me into trouble. Marijuana can get me into trouble. And then if it does get me into trouble, you can land yourself in these veterans' courts. And it's at that point that the veteran, and this is where, again, where it's really appropriate. Because the veteran, just because they're in the veterans' court, doesn't mean they're getting a free pass. And that gentleman we just heard from, you know, he had a monitor for his alcohol use. He had a mentor and a probation officer that, you know, basically guiding him and making, putting certain demands upon him. And if he messes up, just like in any probationary situation, you mess up, you're out of the program. And you don't get a second bite at the apple, just like the PTI program or any other divergent programs. So I think it's an extremely appropriate way to handle cases. You know, we have a friend, Judge Holder, who ran the program in Hillsborough County and very successfully. You know, you get so many criminal cases, and this is just another way for the counties to try to move cases along. You know, we can't try every criminal case. We can't deal with every criminal case that comes before the criminal courts. And so if we have these types of programs, we can divert the veteran. And so I've just had wonderful success with it. I've been a mentor out where I am here in Citrus County, near Marion County, where they have a program there too. And David, we just had Jason White on a show.
Yeah.
And he had, and I think he even testified. He even stated in the interview that as a condition of him going to that Camp Hope in Houston, as a condition of the judge handling the situation that Jason had got himself into, and Jason was in the Veterans Court program, the judge sent him to Camp Hope, and it worked, you know,
and
it just gives our veterans another chance. I mean, you know, you can just get saddled, you know, you can, at a young age, you can get saddled with a criminal record for a misdemeanor or a low-class felony, and I've been a criminal lawyer for a long, long time, and it can really wreck a young man or a young woman's future. And so, anyway, kudos to the Veterans Court. You have anything to add there, David?
No, thank you so much for your insight, Richard. I know you've got a lot of career experience as a criminal defense lawyer, and I appreciate your insight, as well as, you know, your thoughts on what you've seen here in the state of Florida, where as you said, many counties, although not all, have the Veterans Treatment Court programs as part of their court. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting topic, and I hope our listeners found it interesting. Before we go on to our next segment, those of you that may have just tuned in, you're listening to the Veterans News Hour. We have a toll-free call-in number in case you'd like to share your views, your comments, and your questions. Call us during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. In our next segment tonight, we're going to highlight the state of Florida's Department of Veteran Affairs and the services it provides to veterans in Florida. Like many other states, Florida has its own state agency, which helps veterans in many ways. With the third highest number of veterans in the nation, the state of Florida's department finds a high demand for its services. So let's listen to this story, courtesy of the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs. Doug, if you roll tape two, please.
Florida is home to more than 1.5 million veterans, including more than 1 million who served in wartime. more than 500,000 Vietnam veterans, 231,000 veterans of Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, 160,000 women veterans. All in all, Florida is home to America's third largest veteran population. That's why the role of the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs is so critical.
It's the job of the federal VA to provide health care. It's the job of the FDVA to help Florida veterans connect to that health care. Every year, Florida veterans leave millions of dollars of benefits on the table. We're working to change that.
VA healthcare is changing to meet the needs of today's veterans, including a growing population of women veterans.
I feel like I'm making a difference, educating women veterans and counseling and just talking to them and listening to their concerns and, you know, helping to provide resources. I feel happy that I can do that. And being one, I know what kind of needs, you know, we have.
Florida veterans draw down $13.4 billion in federal compensation, but fewer than half of all veterans access the benefits and services they've earned. After our country's long military engagements in Iraq and Afghanistan, we have thousands of veterans returning to Florida to start new lives.
Working for FDVA gives me an opportunity to give back to the community. Myself as a veteran and majority of our department are veterans, and we all enjoy helping the veterans that are coming back as well as their family, giving them resources and information they need to be successful. Here at FDVA, we provide them with information with state benefits and VA benefits. Those benefits include home loans, education benefits, as well as Veterans Administration benefits, claims and appeals.
With more than half of Florida veterans being over the age of 50, and being home to the largest population of World War II veterans, the FDVA plays a big role in meeting the needs of an aging veteran population.
They served us during times of conflict and put their lives on the lines during the Vietnam, World War II, Korean conflicts. And so it's an honor for me to work with them and serve them as they served me. I do all kinds of things. I go shopping for them, advocate for them, fight for them when I need to, be their voice when they don't have a voice necessarily.
Every day that I come into work, I know I'm able to help honor veterans by how I'm able to support them. When I got out of the military 7 years ago, I really could have used an organization like this in my life to tell me how I can find the resources I need, if it's healthcare, if it's benefits, if it's just communicating to someone that we're here for you. It's a network of support that is absolutely invaluable. A veteran needs it every single day, and we're here to help provide that.
Advocating for Florida veterans, connecting veterans to earned benefits and services, honoring those who served us.
So, Richard, what do you think? I know you've had experience dealing with VSOs from the Florida Department.
Oh.
I meant that in a positive way, my friend.
I don't know. Earlier before we went on the air, I interviewed a client, six, 7 months ago, and he decided he was going to go the VSO route, and he just sent me an email. I pulled him in the air, and he said, "I should have stayed with you." But what do you think, David?
Well, I think it's important that veterans are aware that the state government does fund an agency, and there's also county agencies as well that provide free services for veterans.
Let me interview you for a second on this. The problem I have with that is that anybody can push paper out the door. We get form. We have forms for the VA, and you fill in the blanks. You fill in the condition. On the supplemental claim form, what are the new conditions that you have? You put it in there: depression, PTSD, whatever it can, and you send it out the door. And so often, I don't even know what the percentages are. That's all they do. And you and I both know that's not how these cases get won.
Right.
You've got to work these cases.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think what we've seen is that the cases we tend to see are the more complicated cases, and when we see them, it often seems like they were not fully developed with evidence. The VA has, the federal VA, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, has this legal duty to assist veterans, which has now been cut back a bit. But they have a duty to assist veterans, which basically it's supposed to be a non-adversarial process, but we know it often seems adversarial. My point is, I think many of these veteran service officers, whether they're organizations, veteran organizations, or if they're state or county government organizations like the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs, that sometimes at least the cases we see, that they put a little bit too much blind faith that the federal VA is going to do right for veterans. And you and I know that often, or in many cases, the ones we see at least, it doesn't seem that's the case. But in any event, I wanted veterans to be aware of this, and I think, Richard, we need to go on to the next segment in the interest of time, but you have the website, if you give that out for our Florida veterans.
It's floridavets.org. That's floridavets.org.
Yep, and every state has their own. So veterans, if you're listening from around the country, you can find your state veterans organization as well as a resource too about state benefits. So Richard, why don't we move on now to the next segment? I think you were going to intro that for us.
Our next report tonight is a reminder to veterans and their families who served and lived at the Marine Corps Camp Lejeune between 1953 and
1980. Richard, the one before that, we were going to talk about.
Sorry. All right, now let's turn to a topic of concern to many veterans and their families. That is the psychological impact of military service, particularly in wartime, although not limited to just combat. That includes the effects of post-traumatic stress on service members and veterans, as well as the secondary impact on their family members. The VA is continuing to work toward developing new ways to treat PTSD. In this next segment, we have a report from the VA on new ways for the VA to diagnose the condition, particularly in terms of the changes that occur in a person's brain because of it. Very interesting topic.
For combat veterans, the ordeals they experience during wartime can create painful, unwanted memories, memories that may have an unsettling effect on a veteran's life if left untreated. But to heal these emotional scars, an accurate diagnosis is first needed, and VA is doing that in a new and innovative way.
It was his lifelong dream to fly, so Bob Michelson joined the Air Force, serving as a gunner on a B-29 during World War II. That's when his life suddenly changed.
Our airplane was shot down over Tokyo in May of 1945, and we were, of course, captured on the ground and put into what we thought were prison cells. We later learned they were the Emperor's horse stall.
For several months, Bob and 17 other Americans were held as prisoners of war in those horse stalls, treated brutally and fearing they'd never get out alive.
We thought if we don't die of starvation, they'll kill us anyway.
Now, more than six decades later, those horrible memories continue to haunt Bob. The psychological pain they cause him results from post-traumatic stress disorder. For generations, millions of veterans like Bob have suffered from PTSD related to wartime experiences. But there's never been a concrete way to diagnose the condition.
Finding physical signs of a mental disorder has been and continues to be the holy grail of mental health research.
But now researchers at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and the University of Minnesota have found a reliable way to diagnose PTSD. Using this MEG scanner, scientists can clearly determine that the brain can be injured not only by physical impact, but also by traumatic experiences.
Researchers took brain scans of healthy patients and those with PTSD. Comparing those scans, they found big differences in the right temporal lobe and in the way that communicates with the rest of the brain.
What does that mean? PTSD can now be diagnosed with nearly 100% accuracy. And by comparing scans over time, it can be determined which treatments are most effective and how well patients are recovering. But perhaps most important is that the scan provides scientific proof that PTSD exists, validating that this form of mental illness is real and helping to erase the stigma.
It confirms what they knew already, that somehow what they went through changed the way they thought, feel, changed their brains.
That long-term effect has surely been true for Bob Michelson, who says confirming his PTSD through the scan led him to treatment, therapy, and the ability to talk about his ordeal for the first time in 60 years.
Now that you can say, yes, we can prove that this is happening, it's a big step forward.
The symptoms of PTSD usually start soon after a traumatic event, but that's not always the case. It may be months or even years before they appear, sometimes coming and going over time. If you feel that you're suffering from PTSD, it's important to seek treatment. Remember, VA is there for you. For detailed information about PTSD and the types of services available through VA, go to www.mentalhealth.va.gov.
Well, that's an interesting story. If any of our listeners have had experience with the use of brain scans as part of their PTSD diagnosis from the VA, we certainly welcome hearing about your experience. Richard, over to you now.
You want to go to our next segment?
Sure.
Okay, our next report tonight is a reminder to veterans and their families who served and lived at the Marine Corps Camp Lejeune between 1953 and 1987 and were exposed to contaminated drinking water. We have a news clip from VA Secretary David Shulkin on that topic.
Veterans stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, between August 1, 1953 and December 31, 1987, may have been significantly impacted by contaminants in the drinking water. The Department of Veteran Affairs has made two types of benefits available for honorably discharged veterans and, in some cases, family members who were located at base housing at Camp Lejeune for at least 30 days during this time frame. The first benefit provides health care or health care cost reimbursement for veterans and family members for 15 illnesses or conditions that may have been attributed to their service at Camp Lejeune. Family members who lived at Camp Lejeune during this period may also be eligible for reimbursement of out-of-pocket medical expenses for the covered conditions. The second benefit available is a disability compensation, which covers 8 presumptive conditions. These benefits apply to active duty, reserve, and guard members stationed at Camp Lejeune during the qualifying period. Taking care of veterans and their families is VA's top priority. It is our mission to make sure you receive the high-quality care and benefits you have earned and deserve. If you served in Camp Lejeune during this time frame and would like more information, please visit the website on the screen. Thank you.
And that website is, if you go to va.gov, that's va.gov, and search through the benefits link there, you'll find that there's a lot of information about Camp Lejeune. I'd like to thank the VA for that clip from the current VA Secretary, Dr. David Shulkin, but I'd like to elaborate on a few things for the benefit of our listeners tonight. There were, at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, there were 2 on-base water wells that were shut down in 1985, according to the VA, that had a number of toxic chemicals, including trichloroethylene, perchloroethylene, benzene, vinyl chloride, and then some other toxic substances. And as Dr. Shulkin had mentioned, but I'll elaborate, you, if you're a veteran, may be able to get disability benefits if you serve at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River, North Carolina, for at least 30 cumulative days. And I emphasize the word cumulative. They don't have to be consecutive. In other words, you could have served, let's say, 14 days at one point and 16 days. But if it's at least 30 cumulative days between August of 53 and December of 87, and you were discharged from the military under conditions other than dishonorable, and you had a diagnosis of 1 of 8 conditions, then you can... there will be a presumption that those conditions were as a result of that exposure to the toxic waters. Now, what are those 8 presumptive conditions for claims purposes? If you're a veteran, if you're a reservist or guardsman, served at least 30 cumulative days. Those eight include adult leukemia, aplastic anemia and other mild dysplastic syndromes, urinary bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. That's a list of eight that Dr. Shulkin mentioned. Now, what about the other benefit, which is health care coverage? Now, that was the other major benefit, aside from the disability compensation. Well, veterans, again, if they served at Camp Lejeune and Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 cumulative days between August of 53 and December of 87, and their family members, they can get certain health care benefits. The VA is required by law to pay veterans back their out-of-pocket health care costs that were related to any of 15 conditions. And no, this is a much broader list than the eight for disability claims purposes, and these 15 conditions were a result of a law passed by Congress, unlike the list of eight, which were VA regulation. Now, the 15 conditions for health care include urinary bladder cancer, breast cancer, esophageal cancer, female infertility, hepatic ileosis, kidney cancer, leukemia, lung cancer, miscarriage, multiple myeloma, mild dysplastic syndromes, and neurobehavioral effects, as well as non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, renal toxicity, and scleroderma. Now, if you are a family member, you can also receive reimbursement for health care coverage. The VA website has the procedures, the forms you need to fill out to apply for benefits. You can apply online, or you can download the forms and fax or mail it to the address that they have on the website. And if you apply, you'll need to give the VA proof of, this is if you're a family member, proof of your relationship to the veteran who served on active duty for at least 30 days at Camp Lejeune and Marine Corps Air Station New River, such as a marriage license for a spouse or a birth certificate as for children, proof that they lived there, that you, the family member, lived there for at least 30 days between August of 53 and December 87. And the VA says that proof can be things like utility bills, base housing records, military orders, or tax forms. And the medical records show you have one of the 15 conditions that I've just mentioned. And then there's a form, you know, this is a world of lots of government forms, but it's just a hurdle you gotta clear. But so that's to elaborate on what Dr. Shulkin had mentioned. Like I say, the VA website has a lot of details, further details. Okay, Richard, over to you.
Did you say that's a hurdle you gotta clear or a hurdle you gotta clear, David?
Hurdle. I'm sorry.
No.
Hurley will help you clear the hurdle, though.
There you go. There you go. Well, should we go to our next segment here?
Well, I think we have I didn't know if you wanted to elaborate further about the Camp Lejeune. We'd had a couple guests on in the past, including Mike Partain.
One of the things I want to and this came up today with one of my clients. If you have a claim, a Camp Lejeune claim, water contamination claim, the question that was posed to me was, our clients in Maine, why does the case have to be sent to Louisville? And what happened in this case was that the decision review officer called me up when we were discussing the case, and halfway through the conversation, he punted and said, look, I shouldn't even be handling this thing. I'm going to refer it down to Louisville. Well, she was upset by that because she thought she was going to get some relief. But it appears from everything we've seen that the Louisville Regional Office is, in fact, handling all of these claims. And I think Mike Partain, who's an expert on the Camp Lejeune issues, when he was on our show, had confirmed that one of the reasons that Louisville is hearing these cases is so that they have a consistent decision-making body. They don't want different states making different decisions that could adversely or favorably affect the veteran. And, you know, if they don't want someone in Florida getting a better result than maybe someone in Maine. So Louisville's handling everything. So for all you veterans out there who might have Camp Lejeune water contamination cases, if that comes up and you're in Minnesota or Washington or somewhere, and you're wondering why your case is being sent over to Louisville, that's the reason. So that's one observation I have about that, David.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, and as you said, Richard, we've had a couple guests in the past over the last year that have been experts on the Camp Lejeune water issue. If, in case any of our listeners are interested, one of the great things about BBS Radio is that all our prior shows are archived podcasts. If you go back and listen to our March 5th, 2018 show, our January 8th, 2018 show, we had Mike Partain, who was our guest. He was a co-founder and spokesman for a group called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. Another show which was July 31st, 2017, our guest was Gavin Smith of the nonprofit organization called Civilian Exposure. Both Mike and Gavin are nationally recognized experts on this important issue of toxic exposure at Camp Lejeune. Now let's move on to our fifth segment tonight. In our fifth segment, we're going to highlight services available to military families who have lost a family member during military service. Of course, losing a loved one is one of the most difficult things anyone can go through. In the state of Florida, just to highlight one example, there's the Florida Survivor Outreach Services, acronym SOS, which can connect those families with the people who can help them move through and find strength in the most difficult time. Now, the Survivor Outreach Service coordinators are located throughout the state of Florida. They provide long-term support and assistance to families of the fallen, and that includes expertise on state and federal survivor benefit, assistance on obtaining those benefits, arranging for estate and financial advice, also working with the military command and community social services to help support the needs of these military survivors and form networks and support groups, which are extremely important. Now, many of you may have heard about Gold Star families, but you may not have heard of two similar programs, recognition programs, and that's for Blue Star and Silver Star families. We have a story now, courtesy of the Florida Department of Veteran Affairs, which explains what the gold, silver, and blue stars mean. I thought this might be a nice introduction for our listeners. So, Doug, if you'll roll tape 5, please.
The Blue Star service flag began in World War I as an unofficial symbol that a child was serving in the military. During World War II, it was officially adopted by the Department of Defense to indicate that an immediate family member is serving in the armed forces during a period of war or hostilities in which the United States is involved. To this day, it can be seen proudly displayed by family members of those currently serving in our military. The service flag contains a blue star, which represents hope and pride. The red border signifies the blood given by so many of our warriors in defense of our freedom, our country, and human dignity both at home and on foreign soil. The field of white stands for the purity of spirit and the price of peace that only a warrior can truly know. A silver star service flag is often presented to the family of a warrior who has been injured during combat duty.
When a warrior gives his or her last full measure of devotion in the defense of this nation, the star on his or her blue star service flag is covered with a gold star. The gold star represents courage and the supreme sacrifice given to the cause of liberty and freedom. The family of a fallen service member will often place this gold star flag in the front window of their home as a sign of honor and remembrance.
Another symbol of service is the Blue Star Service lapel pin, a replica of the service flag. It identifies the immediate family members of those serving in our armed forces during these times of official conflict.
There are also symbols that identify the family of a fallen hero. These symbols of sacrifice are the Gold Star lapel pin and the next of kin pin. The Gold Star lapel pin is issued by the Department of Defense to families whose loved ones died in combat theater. At the conclusion of World War II, Congress established the Gold Star lapel pin to provide an appropriate means to identify widows and widowers, children, parents, brothers and sisters of members of the armed forces of the United States who lost their lives in the defense of democracy and freedom during World Wars I and II, and any subsequent armed hostilities in which the United States became engaged. The Gold Star lapel pin's unique design incorporates the symbols that include the family's loss. The laurel wreath border signifies valor. The purple field signifies the family's grief or mourning. The gold star has been used since World War I to signify died in combat theater. The next of kin pin is also issued by the Department of Defense to families of those service members who died from a non-combat injury.
A Blue Star mother is the mother of an active duty or honorably discharged member of our United States military. A Silver Star mother is the mother of an injured warrior.
A Gold Star mother is the mother of a fallen U.S. service member who died in combat theater or from a service-related death, illness, suicide, or accident while on active duty.
We'd like to thank the Florida Department of Veterans Affairs for that. And I'd like to highlight that there are many organizations, both nationally and locally, that support Gold Star families. Those organizations and others provide support for those that have suffered the tragic loss of a loved one in military service. And they include such organizations in the state of Florida as the Florida Survivor Outreach Services that I mentioned earlier, but also nationally, organizations like the American Gold Star Mothers, Gold Star Awareness, Gold Star Wives, and also the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, or TAPS program, which provides very valuable support to family members at the most difficult time. So I hope, although it's a difficult topic, really, that people perhaps don't like to talk about, I think it was very important that people learn more about kind of the recognition and the history behind the Gold Star programs, but also the Blue and the Silver Star programs as well. Now, Richard, I know we've got about 8 minutes left, so let me turn it over to you. We may have to abbreviate our news for tonight before we go to closure.
Thank you, David. In the news from Washington, D.C., VA Secretary David Shulkin testified this past Wednesday, March 21st, 2018, before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee on the VA's budget request for fiscal year in 2019. His full testimony can be found on the committee's website, which is veterans.senate.gov. That's veterans.senate.gov. Secretary Shulkin stated that the president's 2019 budget request of $198.6 billion for VA, which is $88.9 billion in discretionary funding, including medical care collections. In total, this discretionary request is an increase of $6.8 billion, or 8.3%, over the president's 2018 budget request. It will sustain the progress we have made and provide additional resources to improve patient access and timeliness of medical care services for the approximately 9 million enrolled veterans eligible for VA health care, while improving benefits delivery for our veterans and their beneficiaries. The President's 2019 budget also requests $197 billion in mandatory funding, of which $107.7 billion was previously requested for programs such as disability compensation and pensions, accelerating processing of disability claims. According to Secretary Shulkin, since 2013, VA has made remarkable progress toward reducing the backlog of disability compensation claims pending over 125 days. VBA's 2019 budget request of $2.9 billion would allow VBA to maintain the improvements made in claims processing over the past several years. This budget prioritizes more timely review of 1.3 million rating claims and 187,000 higher level reviews to decrease the amount of time veterans wait for a resolution. It also prioritizes fiduciary care for vulnerable beneficiaries to ensure protection for VA's most vulnerable veterans who are unable to manage their VA benefits. This budget supports the disability compensation benefits programs for 4.5 million veterans and 600,000 survivors. Secretary Shulkin also told the Senate committee last week that, quote, to continue improving disability compensation claims processing, VBA has implemented an initiative called Decision Ready Claims. The acronym is DRC. The DRC initiative offers veteran service members and survivors faster supplemental claims decisions through partnership with veteran service organizations, VSOs, and other accredited representatives to assist applicants with ensuring all supporting evidence is included with the claim at the time of submission, enabling the claim to be decided within 30 days of submission to the VA. In 2019, VBA plans to complete 25% were nearly 300,000 disability compensation claims under the more timely DRC initiative. Decisions on appeals. In his testimony before the Senate committee, Secretary Shulkin also addressed the system for disability claims. He said, and I quote, "In August 2017, the President signed into law the Veterans Appeals Improvement Modernization Act of 2017, which represents the most significant statutory change to affect VA claims and appeals in decades and provides much-needed reform. VA is in the process of implementing the new claims and appeal system by promulgating regulations, establishing procedures, hiring and training personnel, and developing IT systems. By February 2019, all requests for a review of VA decisions will be processed under the new law, which will provide a more efficient claims and appeals process for veterans, with opportunities for early resolution of disagreements with VA decisions. The 2019 requested $174.8 million for the Board of Veterans Appeals. The board is $12.9 million above the 2018 budget and will sustain the 1,020 full-time employees who will adjudicate and process legacy appeals while implementing the Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act. The board is currently on place to produce over 81,000 decisions at a historic level of production, according to Secretary Shulkin. In addition, the VBA is also undertaking a similar multi-pronged approach to modernize its appeals process through legislative reform, increased resources, technology, process improvements, and increased efficiencies. The request, $74 million for appeals processing, increases VA's appeals full-time employees by 605, more than 40% above 2018. According to Secretary Shulkin, and I quote, "This increase comes after VBA realigned its administrative appeals program under the Appeals Management Office in January 2017 as part of an effort to streamline and improve performance in legacy appeals processing. The improved focus and accountability resulting from this realignment helped increase VBA appeals production by 24%, decrease its appeals inventory by 10%, and increase its appeals resolutions by 10%, resolving over 124,000 appeals during 2017. As far as technological improvements in the claim system, Secretary Shulkin also told the committee that in 2019, the Appeals Modernization Project will achieve the benefit of using case flow certification, which is a commercially developed system that will help reduce errors and delays caused by disjointed manual processing and improve the veteran experience by enabling transparency of appeals processing and ultimately facilitating the delivery of more timely appeals decisions." That's a lot from Secretary Shulkin.
Yeah, we'll see how that actually pans out, but February 2019 now is just 11 months away, so we'll be watching this and monitoring it very closely to see how this appeal stuff really ends
up. David, I love that one comment in there. He said, "and improve the, quote, the veteran experience."
Yeah, we could. We'll spend more shows talking about that, but we're about out of time tonight. I'd like to do our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about the VA's program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life, to civilian life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, as we know, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help family members help the veterans. Give their number a call. It's toll-free 1-888-823-7458. That's Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And also, don't forget, the VA does sponsor a Veterans Crisis Line to help veterans who are suicidal or experience any sort of crisis. Their number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It's been hopefully an informative hour for our listeners. Thank you for being with us this evening. I'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for his great support, and we'd like to invite listeners who be interested in becoming show guests in the future. Contact Richard Hurley or myself. Our contact information is on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you have a great week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on Veterans Issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.